Very good morning. If you've just joined us, it is the day of Dr. Raymond Hamdan. Every Wednesday, your appointment with the clinical and forensic psychologist based at the Human Relations Institute. He's here to take your questions this morning on 4001. And one lovely text just come in saying, just like to thank you and Dr. Raymond, due to your advice and solutions from Dr. Raymond, I was able to help a relative of mine in a pretty bad mental state. And she is doing much, much better now. Thank you so much for everything. Well, thank you for taking the trouble or even being brave enough to send in your question. It's not easy to reach out sometimes, and we do the best we can each week. Of course, Dr. Raymond is the qualified psychologist, and we can only go on what we're given through a text message. So
it is very kind,
but also I think, you know, if it's about a friend or a family member and it's really causing you a lot of distress and concern,
of course, about yourself, you don't have to blame it on a friend or family member.
But I think it's important to always get a second opinion, to get professional help, go to a clinic like the Human Relations Institute, depending what the concerns are. And lots of messages to get through. We'll get to those in just a second. But we have been talking about happiness and the relevance of happiness in our everyday life. And we've looked at the interpersonal, how we connect with others. We've looked at the intrapersonal with relationship to ourselves, how we connect with ourselves internally, how we view the world, how we problem solve, etc. And somebody was asking earlier about defining what crazy is. And, you know, sometimes when you are in the midst of despair or feeling stressed or feeling anxiety or even depression, or, you know, you are feeling unhappy with yourself and with your life, when you're in those darkest moments, you could question your sanity. You could question your mental health. So to understand the degrees of negativity, the degrees of the dark place, if you like, because so much more people seem to be aware of their health and their state of mind and whether they're happy or not happy. And sometimes it's really important to question and to think about and maybe address some issues. Other times it could be the case, as we looked at earlier, where we're overthinking or we are too concerned with our happiness when actually we should just be living our life.
Crazy is not a term that psychologists use. As a matter of fact, we'd be in big trouble legally if we ever did use that word. Frankly, I thought that crazy was an R&B rock group. I had no idea that it was a term that we would use in psychology. People can use that term to mean that we're out of touch with reality or that we're having a lot of difficulty. The word crazy is certainly taking a tongue-in-cheek kind of usage. We don't use it professionally. You're not going to see a professional psychologist say that this person is crazy. But we will indicate that a person is having difficulty adjusting to reality, that they are testing reality, that they may be having trouble with delusions, with hallucinations. They may be somewhat autistic in their approach, and I'm not talking about autism as a spectrum. I'm talking about where they isolate themselves. And their emotions are quite ambivalent, never appropriate for the situation. So what is abnormal would be a person who deviates from the normal realm. Now, the normal realm is determined by what the majority does. And that, in psychology, is not always the case. Like, for instance, let's take children of divorce. There's nothing normal about being from a divorced family. It's very destructive. And even if the majority of people come from divorced homes, it doesn't mean that the reaction is normal psychologically. It can be quite disruptive. So what we're looking at, though, when we look at clinical abnormalities is that...
Have a little drink there, Dr. Raymond.
Thank you very much.
whilst you're doing that, I'm just going to go through just some outlines here with regards to perhaps where we might fall down with regards to our mental health or indeed about happiness. And we spoke earlier about it being down to our responsibility, how we view the world. But of course, you know, sometimes clinically we can't take that responsibility. There's things happening in our body, in our brain, in our physiology that's taking over us. So that's where we need to seek a clinical support and help from a professional such as yourself. But then there might be other things. One here saying focus on the present, not yesterday or tomorrow. So if it is something you can manage, if it's about your general sense of well-being and happiness, then actually dwelling too much on the past or worrying too much about the future can actually not help at all, and in fact just try to be present and move through your life that way, and maybe you'll find that you're a lot happier.
Good opportunities to meet a lot of wonderful people from all of the different communities in the work that we do. Some people do need to deal with their past, and they do need to understand where they are today because of their past. Many people would say also, to understand where you're going to go in the future, you need to know your past. What have you learned from the past? But in no way do psychologists only focus on that. As a matter of fact, most psychologists today who are well-trained and correctly trained actually go with what is going to be most helpful for positive change in the individual, whether we're doing assessments and evaluations or treatment remediation or follow-up and aftercare. What we're looking at is helping the person make positive changes. Now, when we look at abnormalities, at what we carelessly use as the word crazy, 90% of the people that psychologists see are normal people with adjustment problems. Having an adjustment problem doesn't mean you're crazy. When we talk about crazy in a very loose way, in psychology we're talking about maybe psychosis, where a person is not thinking in realistic terms. They're not emotionally responding in realistic terms, and therefore the behavior is not. What we typically see would be the ambivalence in emotions, where they're not responding correctly to an emotional situation with the correct emotions that is anticipated for that situation, or they're having difficulty in relating to other people. They psychologically isolate themselves. They could be having delusions where they think that they are someone else, or that they're being persecuted because they're somebody special and the world is out to hurt them. And there's also the fact that people may have hallucinations where they're seeing things that are not there. They're hearing things that are actually not there. These would be chemical imbalances where medication is required, sometimes even hospitalization. But also normal people can have what's called an acute psychotic episode, which means that for a very, very stressed period of time, they may actually lose contact with reality. But they're not suffering from schizophrenia or the bipolar disorders or anything like that. They're actually having an acute stress disorder, an acute psychotic episode that could be produced by severe stress or burnout. So these are the kind of things that we evaluate. By knowing the person's history will give us a better idea of how to diagnose. If a person has never had this episode before or had various kinds of psychological disorders before, then we know that this situation is a temporary situation, and we know what its origin is. So therefore, we would need to know the medical history, the psychological history, even social and educational history of that individual. So in dealing with these assessment processes, it's very important to know the person's history to understand where they are today and where they can go in the future. It's not unusual to have stress. Stress is part of everyday life. Sometimes we deal with it one way, sometimes another. But when we talk about general issues of society like happiness, how stressed must a person be, and how stressed is society when you walk through a shopping mall or go to a restaurant or go to the movies? How many people are really smiling? How many people want to interact? How many people live in a community where it's good to say, "Hi, how you doing today?" and not really want an answer, but it's just a way of speech? How many people are happy to say good morning and get a positive reaction? Sometimes actually try it. Even when you're walking by and you see somebody with a frown or an angry look, why don't you just look at them and say, "Hi, good morning, how are you today?" Even if you don't know them. And see the reaction that you get. Sociologists did some interesting research on this in the United States. In the United States, they asked people who were going to ask for help to make physical contact, ever so brief. It was just the fingertip on the forearm of the person you're asking for help. So just reach out, barely touch their forearm. What they found is that in 85% of those cases, that individual who was contacted just by the tip of the finger on the forearm was more likely to help the individual who was requesting help, whether it was a person who needed help in dialing a telephone number, changing a car tire, or taking a photograph while you're in a tourist situation. People helping people became very, very evident because people do want a sense of belonging. People do want a sense of connectedness. And that actually brings in that form of happiness that we can continue talking about.
A text message here from somebody in a relationship saying that it's been quite rocky, it's been up and down, this relationship, but, you know, maybe this is as good as it gets, in that I don't want to walk away and not feel that I haven't given it my all. Interesting, in that, when do you know when it's over? When do you know it's time to walk away?
When do you know that you need to do another movie called Is This As Good As It Gets Too,
yes,
with Jack Nicholson? So, it never is as good as it gets unless you want it to be there. People have to decide how much energy they want to put into the relationship. All relationships can work as long as both individuals mutually define the relationship. But it also means how much energy you want to put into it. If somebody says, I'm willing to put 90% of my energy or 100% of my energy in this relationship, then the other person has to put in 90% or 100%. If both say we're only going to put 5% each, then that is a workable situation. But never should it be that one person puts in 80% and the other person 20%. That's not 100%. It has to be the same amount of energy equivocal by both. Simply because if a person says, I need more time from the other and they're not available, then that individual is going to feel that they've been rejected. The other person may feel overwhelmed or suffocated because the other person needs so much of them. There's nothing wrong with needing a lot of your partner, as long as your partner needs a lot of you. There's also nothing wrong with only sharing 15% of your life together as a married couple, because you have your work and your recreation that may be separate. As long as both of you agree to that definition, then that relationship is a good relationship.